the man, the myth, the not-so-legend, known mostly for two things, a dam and the Great Depression. President Herbert Hoover didn't quite leave the impression on Americans as he'd hoped. But what exactly happened to put such a bitter taste in people's mouth for years when Hoover was mentioned? On this week's episode, we will find out just that. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and you're listening to the Chronicles of Time. Let's dive in to President Herbert Hoover. Future president was born in West Branch, Iowa. Of course, the little lad had no clue he would be running the country one day. Herbert Hoover Clark was just your average child until tragedy struck. His father, a Quaker blacksmith, died from a heart attack when Herbert was only 6 years old. And a mere 3 years later, at the age of 9, he would become an orphan when his mother died of pneumonia. Herbert and his two siblings would move from Iowa to Oregon to live with his uncle, Dr. John Minthorn. And Herbert would attend Quaker schools, but he left at the age of 14 to work at his uncle's business. But he decided after 3 years of doing that, he better return to school. He had his sights set on mining engineering and attempted to be in the first class of Stanford University. Nearly failing the entrance exam, Hoover barely got into the school. To help pay for school, Hoover did chores for his professors and began a laundry service. His years at Stanford would change his life. He would actually meet his future wife, Lou Henry, the first woman to receive a degree in geology from Stanford. In 1895, Herbert graduated. After graduation, finding work was difficult for him, and the work that he did find was grueling. He worked in California pushing ore carts, working 70-hour weeks and making a mere $2 a day. But his luck would change when he received an office job in San Francisco. This job gave Herbert the contacts he needed to advance his career. His life was about to completely take off. He was sent to Australia to manage gold mines, and he did his job so well that they ended up sending him to China. During their time there, they got caught in the midst of the Boxer Rebellion. The rebellion was by a secret society called the Boxers to drive all foreigners from China by violence. Lou Henry would work in a hospital during the rebellion, which left them under siege for a month. After they left China, the pair based themselves out of London, traveling the world. And they had their children, two boys, Herbert Jr. in 1903 and Allen in 1907. Upon returning home to the United States, they had traveled to nearly 40 countries. This gave the Hoovers a matured view of the world and various cultures. Hoover had become an exceptionally wealthy man. He had amassed $4 million within 2 decades of leaving Stanford. He was a very prominent member of society who had made a name for himself. In London, when the First World War broke out, the United States actually asked Hoover to organize the tourists who were trapped in Europe, which was over 100,000 people. He also put forth efforts in Belgium. Several million dollars was raised for supplies due to Hoover and several of his wealthy friends. He truly would play an active role in the war and the relief effort. In 1917, President Woodrow Wilson actually asked Hoover to be in charge of the Food Administration. While in charge, Hoover asked Americans to do meatless Mondays and wheatless Wednesdays. He did an exceptional job because within just 1 year, the United States had doubled its food shipments to troops overseas. Once the war ended, he was appointed to be in charge of the American Relief Administration. During this time, Hoover organized support for millions of people in Central Europe. And at this point in his life, he was known for his massive humanitarianism. Admired by many, both political parties sought him out as a presidential candidate. But in 1920, it was Warren G. Harding that received the nomination and ultimately the presidency. But Harding appointed Hoover as Secretary of Commerce, and under his leadership, it became an important government agency. He would remain under control during President Calvin Coolidge's term as well. But after that, he was ready for the big job, Chief of the United States. When Coolidge announced he wasn't going to seek another term, the timing was perfect for Hoover. He easily won the presidential nomination for the Republican Party, despite having never held an elective office. During his campaign, he was running against Democrat Al Smith from New York. It was a landslide in Hoover's favor. He received 444 electoral votes to Smith's 87. And at first, it was a glorious 7 months of his presidency, but all would soon change. In October 1929, the stock market crashed and chaos erupted in the United States. Banks and businesses nationwide closed and unemployment skyrocketed. As a result, Hoover asked major business leaders to the White House to see if they'd pledge not to cut wages in the risk of facing unemployment. And okay, this idea seems lovely in retrospect, but it resulted in major unemployment where they weren't cutting wages. Hoover also expanded many federal government areas like tax policy, internal trade, agriculture, wage policy, immigration, and federal spending. But his stance on the failing economy was that the government should have a limited role due to its posing so-called threat on capitalism. Hoover felt assistance should be from a local basis and voluntarily. But who the hell is going to volunteer their money during a depression? And the local places are relying on the government for help. He didn't provide federal relief for the unemployed. Instead, Hoover vetoed bills that would have given relief to struggling Americans. He said in a State of the Union address of 1930 that prosperity cannot be restored by raids upon the public treasury. But Americans felt abandoned and uncared for. People nationwide began calling worn-down towns Hoovervilles. Herbert Hoover was turning the American people against him. He was the scapegoat for the Great Depression. So when he campaigned against Franklin Roosevelt for a second term, it was to no surprise that FDR absolutely defeated him. Hoover left the White House in disgrace, having many Americans excited for a new leader. He returned to his California home, being only 58 when he finished the presidency. In the 1930s, he was a major critic on FDR's New Deal. But in the 1950s, Hoover would return to public service, serving on commissions trying to increase efficiency in the government. He would write many books, over 40 throughout his life, and was even working on one when he died in 1964. He was 90 years old and passed away of colon cancer. But after all these years, people can't seem to agree on Hoover's legacy. Some believe he did the best he could, but in my opinion, I think more could have and should have been done. I don't think Herbert Hoover was the leader that the country needed. The next president did enough to get us out of the Great Depression, and that means more to me than he did the best he could. Well, FDR did too, and he actually did it better because it worked. But these are just my thoughts and opinions. And yes, the Hoover Dam is named after Mr. Hoover himself. The reason is because Hoover actually had a heavy hand in its creation. Hoover also has a presidential library located in West Branch, Iowa that you can visit. Does Hoover get such a bad legacy because FDR was so loved? Or is it rightfully his own fault due to how he handled the Depression? That's completely up to you all to decide. As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode over President Herbert Hoover. If you want to learn more on the Great Depression, episode 14 covers both it and the New Deal. And if you have any episode suggestions or want to just talk history, email me at thechroniclesoftimepodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, please leave a rating and review and tell all your friends. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and you just listened to the Chronicles of Time.